Top stories in the news at this hour. President Ford and Soviet Ambassador Bill Bremen held an important meeting in Washington today. The House has voted to change bankruptcy laws to help cities which default. And Governor Kerry sets a very tough program for New York State. This is Lester Smith reporting. Next news as it happens. Next scheduled news at 11 o'clock over WOR, Radio 710, The Talk of New York. And here's Gene Shepard.
Probably one of the most primitive primal sounds known to man, the sound of heavy seas rushing past the hull of a sailing vessel. A real thing. I just got back from a voyage through the parts of the Windward Islands, retracing the steps of the ports of call, some of the ports of call of Christopher Columbus, the great navigator. The ancient sailor of the sea. He sailed in the area of Martinique, Dominica, and the great island of Guadeloupe, and the far Windward Islands, about 200 miles off the coast of South America, 1,500 miles east and south of Florida, far out in the South Atlantic. And this is the way the waves and the water and the hull, the wind going through the rigging sounded. You can hear the crew. That's the crew talking as they trim sail. The crew, by the way, consisted of a Barbadian, a Grenadian, a man from Grenada, and one from, I believe he was also a Barbadian. I think there were two Barbadians and one man from Grenada. And then the captain, who was a public school educated, a romantic Englishman, cut from the mold of Sir Francis Chichester and Alan Villiers, who had sailed this very vessel, by the way, across the Atlantic, using nothing but the wind and a section to guide him, and a couple of charts. Isn't that a great sound? This is recorded. I dropped the mic down near the waterline, and this was recorded while we were sailing between Dominica, or Dominica, depending on how what part of the island you come from. As we were sailing north towards Guadalupe. Force 5 wind, by the way, the ship was treading before the winds at about 11 or 12 knots, which is very, very fast. The wind-driven sailing, you see, Jim? She was heeled over at about a 45-degree angle, and everybody aboard her was clinging for dear life to the salt-drenched decks. And just about the time I recorded this, a flying fish flew aboard. She was skinned, landed in the cockpit. Gorgeous silver and blue fish, which is a great delicacy in Barbados, by the way. Every morning, brought in fresh from the sea during the season, fixed with nutmeg. Now, if you don't like fish, you wouldn't like that. I personally think it's a gorgeous recipe. Okay. Now, we'll give you a little more of that sound later on. And just about that time, when we came into the harbor of the anchorage in Martinique. We stopped in Martinique for a while. Beautiful. Martinique has to be one of the most beautiful islands in the Windward Islands. And it's very, very French. There's no way for me to describe the Frenchness of it because, in fact, I'll say this about it. It's more French. Now, this may sound a little contradictory, but it is more French than many parts of France today. And I'll tell you why. This is not just idle chatter here. But France, like all parts of Europe, and in fact the Western world, has become somewhat standardized because we all have the same shell stations. Many of the same television shows are watched throughout Europe that we see. Believe it or not, they get canon over there. And the world has become more or less standard. But in the far southern reaches of the Caribbean, the civilization that we know in many areas has more or less passed them by. And they remain purer. And the island of Martinique was settled around 200 years ago by order of Emperor Napoleon. He sent some Norman and Breton farmers to settle this island after they had taken possession of it in an attempt to create the French civilization down there and to provide food and income for the empire. Well, the farmers have remained. Of course, Napoleon's empire has gone, but what remains are the descendants of these Norman and Breton farmers, and they are very strange-looking people. How many of you remember a film years ago, a science fiction film, many years ago, not that long ago, actually, it was not that long ago, a color film, it was a good film, one of the better films, science fiction type things, where a race of people lived wandering above the earth, and below them was a race of evil people, of evil creatures. Do you recall such a film? Yeah, I'm sorry, Ile de Saint, not Martinique. Ile de Saint, yes, that's right, I'm sorry. I was jumping ahead. But Martinique itself is very French. And in fact, they're all part of the same group. Ile de Saint, Martinique, Guadeloupe are all very French, all three of these. But Ile de Saint, which is better called the Saints, the island of the Saints, there are two tiny islands that are like, well, I can only say if you saw a cross section of the ocean, if I were to show you the ocean cross section, and you see the bottom of the ocean, right, and then you see the surface of the sea up above. Well, this is a really deep ocean down there. The depths of the ocean in that area range around as deep as 1,500 fathoms. That's deep. Figure it out. A fathom is 6 feet. So multiply it there on your little 1495 Macy's Texas Instruments special calculator, and you'll find it's a lot of water. It ranges from anywhere from 1,000 fathoms, which is 6,000 feet, to 1,500 fathoms. Now, these islands are long, thin gouts of volcanic rock that come from the bottom of the sea and come all the way up. If you can imagine a needle coming right up through the sea. It's very weird looking. It looks like a cross-section of a molar with a root canal. And you see this little... It's like a needle of soil. It's not really soil. It's rock. It's volcanic rock coming right from the seabed right up to the top of the water, right to the surface. And it just jets above the surface. That's it. A little round thing on the top. Well, that is where these islands look. So if you take a little rowboat and you row out from the island about 300 or 400 yards, right below you now is 6,000, 7,000 feet of water. Theory. We generally think of a sea as being a gradual thing, you know. And when you, like our ocean, for example, surrounding America, if you were to go out, in fact, our captain said that you can almost tell where you are in relationship to the North American continent by how deep the water is. And it's a gradual, slow rising of the sea bottom until finally there's the continent. But these islands are not like that. These islands just jut right out of the sea, and the sea is immensely deep at that point. Well, now, Martinique, to give you an idea of the kind of volcanic activity there, Martinique has some huge mountains on it that are 4,000 or 5,000 feet above the surface, of course. And these mountains are volcanic and still active. Mount Pelee, for example. Is a tremendous volcano which in 1902 really did it. In 1902, one of the great disasters of the world recorded history occurred in 1902 on a quiet Sunday morning when people were in church and the town what is the town there again? I've forgotten. What? All right, she just says it. It sounds like she said King Kong's friend is what it looks like, but that's not the name of the town. I can assure you. Although King Kong, Saint-Pierre is in 1902 was a big industrial town. They had all kinds of industry going on there. They made among other things, they made furniture from teak and tropical woods. They had a thriving industry in various tropical products, and there's a seaport of great distinction, and had thousands of inhabitants. The pictures of the town would amaze you. In 1902, you think of this would be a tiny fishing village. You're not. It was a big town. Had been there for a couple of hundred years and more, and very old, heavy stone buildings of European style. A cathedral was there, and they had a really thriving community there. Well, all of a sudden, on Sunday morning, just like that, Mount Pelee, which is right behind Saint-Pierre, it erupted. Now, they had known for a couple of weeks that there was some action going on there. But one thing or another, they just did nothing about it, just like human beings all over. Just like us here, like in New York. For years, we've been warned of approaching financial disaster. And what do we do? Well, we just pulled around and built more little funnies out in the park and had more little ding-dongs going on until one day, zap, the roof fell in and everybody screamed like bloody murder, but they all knew about it. Everybody knew. Every politician for the last 15 years has warned us, right? What did we do? Nothing. We kept the party going. Well, that's what happened in Saint-Pierre. And anyway, suddenly, pow, this thing went off. And the people were not inundated by lava, which is what had happened in other parts of the world where great volcanic eruptions occurred. For example, Pompeii, where lava just flowed right down into the city and just completely covered it with ash. Now, these people were all destroyed, 32,000 people, just like that, one split second. The entire population was destroyed, they say, in about 40 seconds, roughly. Enormous gases, and in fact, the heat was so intense, tremendous heat. The heat was so intense in those moments that they have dug up artifacts. For example, Somebody had had a pile of chinaware. China. I mean, talking about China dishes. The heat was so intense, if you can imagine this, the china melted and fused, and you could see seven dishes piled one on top of the other, but they're a solid mass. Imagine the heat that would melt china. Dishes on the table, glassware, for example. There was I saw a goblet that had been on somebody's table at the instant this hit, and the goblet melted as if it was made out of wax. And poisonous gas. It was all over in a split second. The people didn't know what hit them, actually. And there was only one survivor of the entire Holocaust in the entire city of 32,000 people. All the buildings, everything was destroyed. One survivor. And guess where he was? The slam. Yeah, maybe there's a lesson in that place. I don't know quite what the lesson is. I don't know whether I like to look at it, but he was in the pokey. And he wasn't a criminal or anything, but it was Saturday night, it had been the night before, and he'd gotten a little hassle down at the bar, and two or three guys were swinging beer bottles and one thing and another, and they dragged him into the slam, and he was in the pokey. Well, it just so happened that their jail was built directly behind the church there. There was a big church. The remains still are there. You can walk over this town and see it. You can see the buildings. They kept it just the way it was. And there are ruins just jutting up out of the ground everywhere you go. A statue, for example, that was in front of the theater is still laying there on the ground. A statue of a full-blown girl wearing diaphanous gowns of the late Oscar Wilde period. And it's all there. But he is underground. The jail had been built into the side of a hill with part of a foundation dug down into the ground, and he was in a cell. The only one in the cell. He was the only guy in a slam that morning. And bam, this thing went off, and he survived. And became world famous. In fact, he traveled around the world with the Ringling Brothers Circus at that point, being the only man who survived this great, fantastic Holocaust. Even he, though, being underground, his back was tremendously scarred from the searing, fantastic heat, which roared into his cell for a moment. He did not know what had happened. He was in the cell, and next thing he knows, there was a tremendous roar, and he was knocked out. And luckily enough, the bars, to show you how rough this was, the bars, the heavy bars of his cell, had been literally disintegrated, ripped right off and gone. So when he came to, apparently the theory is that he'd been sleeping it off, actually, and was lying under his concrete bunk because it was cool. And he was sleeping it off. And had he been sleeping on top of the bunk like he should have been, or walking around in his cell, he would have been gone too. But he was under the bunk and zapped power. That was it. Everything was all over. He woke up and, he must have had some head. He woke up and his cell was disintegrated. Anyway, this was on the island of Martinique. I'm probably telling you something you very well know yourself. This is WOR New York, and we will be back with more oddments and notes of this fantastic voyage which we took last week, retracing the ports of call, certain ports that Columbus called at. How we did it is the way he did it. We did it in a sailing vessel. This particular vessel, it was a spectacular ocean-going racing vessel named the Celestial. We'll be back immediately following this blast of contemporary civilization. Okay, you got an idea what Martinique and Saint-Pierre is like. However, as we were hurling our way through the seas, I got fascinated by these professional crewmen who... By the way, it's a very good job for a guy down there who can get himself a job crewing on one of these boats, because not only does it pay comparatively well compared to the incomes of the natives in that area, but it also is steady and exciting. When you're careening through the seas on a magnificently designed vessel, the only thing I can take this was close to flying. But flying in a very special type of aircraft. I'm not talking about flying on a 707. I'm talking about perhaps flying on some kind of a converted fighter plane, possibly. This is a total piece of of functional machinery. Thousands of years of ship experience and design goes into one of these vessels. If you were to buy one like the one we were on, built in 1970 and built in England, it was called an Ocean 71. There are only 10 of, or rather 14 of this particular type still that are extant, that have been bought, paid for, and are out in the sea doing their thing. One had floundered. One went down when she struck a reef a couple of years ago, which is never the ship's fault. When one strikes a reef, it's like coming in for a landing with your gear up. It ain't the plane that did it, buddy, it's you. And if you trust this piece of equipment, you'll go well. If you don't, you're in trouble. It takes a strong constitution to sail on one of these, really. It's not for everybody. But if you are of the type that you can do it, it's an unforgettable experience, sailing in those beautiful waters in the area of Guadeloupe and Martinique and the Saints, and just letting it all hang out. Now, I was the crew. The crew are usually guys about 18, 19, 20 years old. I'm talking about mostly black, very, very fantastically talented at what they do, and extremely agile. I'm telling you, these guys make Olga Corbett look a little bit like your grandmother, you know, the one that has to have the heat pads on her knees. These guys swing. And one of them, Jimmy, was from Barbados, or rather from Grenada. Grenada is an island. I've been on Grenada a couple of times. Very special island. If you've ever seen the film Island in the Sun, an old Belafonte film, it's about Grenada. Very special world, Grenada is. And they have their own little local despot working there now. But it's a beautiful island, one of the most beautiful islands in the world. And the people are among the most outgoing, incandescent smiles. They really do. And you can tell a Grenadian, even other islanders recognize a Grenadian immediately by the soft way he speaks. It's an island that has the British antecedents and a soft way of talking and absolutely ebullient personality. And so while he was working, he was swinging back and forth. Jibby was about 18 or 19. Swinging back and forth, trimming the sails, and the captain was barking out orders, and he would work a winch. And all the while, he was muttering, he was singing these songs to himself. And when I asked him why, you know, well, how come he sings that? He said, keep me lively. The song keeps him lively. And here, so I finally says, how about singing for me? So he says, okay. So here's Jibby last week. As we just pulled in, this was recorded just after we had dropped our anchor in, I believe it was in the Saints, in fact. We had just dropped the anchor in the Saints, the tiny French fishing village. We were just lying at anchor there waiting for something to eat. We were fixing something down in the galley, and you can hear Jibby singing. You'll notice the soft accent of the Grenadian, and here's the way he sang.
If you want back my love, pretty baby, pretty baby.
You're beating out the rhythm.
And if you want back my love, pretty baby,
Let's see, he's making the sound of the band, though.
Baby,
see, he's singing his version of rock. So, if you thought you were going to hear an exotic native song about fishing at twilight with the great god Bahal hanging over there, forget it. He was singing his rock. You notice his accent, a kind of a soft, rolling a way of speaking, and that's typically Grenadian. Don't pronounce the island Granada. Granada is a town in Spain. It has nothing to do with Grenada, which is this island of surpassing beauty, which so many of the people who are from the island of Grenada are seamen down there. They work aboard ships. Their native, their life is built on the sea. And he was a great seaman. At the age of 18, he knew what he was doing every minute aboard the ship. Now, I'll go on with this. If you want to hear more of life down in the far Caribbean, this is way down in the Windward Islands, about 200 miles from South America. You know, it's funny, when you spend time aboard a ship after a while, you don't even think in terms of where you are, really. You're on the ship is where you are. And the ship is a world all on its own. Anybody who's ever been in the Navy knows exactly what I'm talking about. You live aboard the ship, it's your home, and it's your home base. It always represents security, too. When we go ashore, we'd see the truck lights and the riding lights of the Celestial out there, a couple hundred feet out in the bay or out in the lagoon. And it always represented the place you knew where you were safe. This is home. I'll be back in a couple of minutes. Columbus, you want to hear more about Columbus when he sailed in the sea. You know, he lost a few men down there. This is not often talked about historically, but Columbus ran into some trouble on a couple of islands there. And he was surprised, too, because he had tried very hard to be friendly. There's a note from one of his letters. If you're curious about where I'm getting a lot of this information, this is from a very fine book called Columbus, Four Voyages to the New World. It's very scholarly. It's in bilingual. It's in two languages, the original language that Columbus used, and this is in English, and it's a Corinth, or a Corinth imprint. And it's well worth having if you're really interested in Columbus. It's the whole story of Columbus. It's all from his letters, his voyages, and his logs. And from the first voyage, he makes a comment here. He says, later on, he's talking about birds. This is from his first letter announcing his discovery of the New World. And he says, all of these islands are very beautiful and distinguished by a diversity of scenery. They are filled with a great variety of trees of immense height, and which I believe to retain their foliage in all seasons. For when I saw them, they were as verdant and luxuriant as they usually are in Spain in the month of May. Some of them were blossoming, some bearing fruit, and all flourishing in the greatest perfection according to their respective stages of growth and the nature and quality of each. Yet the islands are not so thickly wooded as to be impassable. The nightingale and various birds were singing in countless numbers, that in November, the month in which I arrived there. There are, besides, fruits, seven or eight kinds of palm trees, which, like all other trees, herbs, and fruits, considerably surpass ours in height and beauty. And he was impressed by the beauty of these islands, as they are really gorgeous. Probably some of the most beautiful real estate in the world are these islands. The saints especially are just beautiful. The saints are tiny islands which lie between Martinique and Guadeloupe, and are actually islands that the people who live on Guadeloupe go to for their vacations. Extremely French. And the natives have an odd, curious look about them. The people who live there that are descendants of the Breton and Norman farmers, they're, I don't want to say white. I don't want to say black. They're a curious golden color. And their hair has an odd golden curly quality to them. And they have sharp aquiline features. And they kind of shuffle along and they wear their sandals. And they live in this little tiny French village, which is so French that it's in fact more French than contemporary fishing villages along the coast of France. It reminded me very much of parts of the south of France in the area of, Cap d'Antibes, little fishing villages. And as we walked up a hill, looking down on the bay, way down below us, we could see our ships lying at anchor down there. And there was a four-masted schooner that must have been at least 75 or 100 years old, lying at anchor down there, and she later departed. Some local has restored an old sailing vessel. Looked like something right out of possibly Melville, out of that period. Later than Columbus, but certainly much earlier than the QE2. And she had departed. But as we walked up this long, winding road up towards the fort that Napoleon had built 200 years ago, which is incidentally still in mint condition, including the armament, the kitchens, the soldiers' quarters, and so on. As we walked up the hill, I couldn't believe the flowers. The architecture is a kind of a very hip combination of let's say early Caribbean and contemporary Malibu. In fact, it's the kind of architecture that was later copied by people who built things like tropical paradises, Malibu and Laguna Beach and so on. But these people all look out to sea, and one guy had a house. It was really wild. One guy had a house that looked like the bow of a steamer pointed out to sea, and it jetted out like that with portholes. In fact, even an anchor chain hanging down. And he had an anchor on the front there of this thing. And every morning, apparently, he would come out to the bow of his concrete ship and sit down and drink Pernod and eat pears or something and be as decadent as only the French can. But as you went up through the winding road, a little narrow coral road, thousands of chickens and big, tough, beautiful-looking roosters presiding over their flocks, goats and pigs scurried back and forth, and native ladies wearing a curious hat that is worn only in that area, which looks a little like Chinese. And it comes in two pieces. It fits down over the head, and there's a big drooping brim that comes down, very stiff. And they were gossiping away. Curious golden people speaking a French that probably is closer to the Napoleonic French than is spoken in Paris today. But the flowers, you just couldn't believe the fantastic flowers everywhere on that particular island. Apparently, volcanic soil really does something to verdant, luxurious, fantastic growth. But way down below us, as we went higher and higher up to this winding, twisting road, just walking around after we'd had a little aperitif down there in the native bistro, drank a little, it's a curious combination, a little red vin ordinaire, which had been brought from France, in a jelly glass. So you get the combination of the primitive and the elegant. It's a curious combination. So we looked down, way down below us, we could see the Celestial riding an anchor with the Venta Remo, another ship that was with us. And the other one, the third one that was to join us, had not yet arrived. It was still beating in to the island from somewhere down to the south of us, because we were on the fast one. But the gorgeous sunset, as the sun was going down over the hills, and you know that know that this must have knocked Columbus right out to see these fantastic islands. And the Carib Indians, which are on another island, I'll tell you about that tomorrow, they're the last of a long race. This is WOR New York. Stay tuned for In Conversation.